Welcome to the Pensacola Expert Panel with Ruthie C.
This hour is presented by Mainstay Financial and Anna Lee Leonard, who is responsible for the information and opinions expressed during the show.
Hi, this is Financial Advisor of the Year, Jim Brogan of Knoxville, Tennessee. You're listening to Winning with my good friend and colleague, Anna Lee Leonard.
You're listening to Winning with Anna Lee. Anna Lee is a retirement and estate planner, a member of the Ed Slott Master Elite IRA Advisor Group, as well as a sought-after speaker on such topics as income planning, 401k rollovers, and advanced IRA reduction strategies. When not working in her private practice, Anna Lee joins with other certified senior advisors to promote top-quality services to mature adults in the Pensacola area. Her goal is to help you prepare for and live comfortably in retirement. You can reach her office at 437-3127 or online at mainstaypensacola.com. Or call her now at 437-1620 on Winning with Anna Lee.
Good morning and welcome to the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Ruthie C. speaking this morning with Anna Lee Leonard and Mr. Bob Burgey of Mainstay Financial Group. Good morning, Bob. How are you this morning?
I'm well. How are you, Ruthie?
I am doing well. Good. I am hoping for the best with this weather, like you mentioned. We've had a lot of weather news coming through lately, but
have we ever?
Hoping for the best and you know, glad to just continue on life as usual as much as we possibly can.
I hope this isn't the usual.
I certainly agree. I think it would be great if this was the end of the, you know, the last of the Greek alphabet that we're dealing with this year.
Yep, that's right. That's right. Well, we didn't have Annalise lead-in song there, did we?
We didn't this time. I think after the break we'll have that the win no matter what. And we are getting Annalise connected, so she'll be joining us momentarily here.
Okay. All right. Terrific. Well, what we thought we would do to kick this off, we have a big day coming up next week. And, of course, a lot of people have already cast their votes. A lot of people will be hitting the polls on Tuesday of next week. And so we did this. We did sort of a very brief segment or lead into our show about voting and just some voting statistics. And we got a couple calls and some feedback about it, and we thought we'd do a little deeper dive into that today. And so one of the things we wanted to do, and, you know, in the interest of, November 3rd coming up and everything going on, you know, just talk a little bit about voting. And there, it's a very interesting topic. And what we did was we looked at the states voting, the percentages, you know, just everything. And let's just, you know, get right into it. Among the states, all the states, the 50 states. Ruthie, putting you on the spot. What states do you think have the highest voter turnout?
Ooh, highest voter turnout.
It makes you think about a lot of things, doesn't it?
It does. I would say maybe, you know, I would say maybe Florida.
Okay. Since why? Because there's a lot of older people.
Because there are older people here in Florida.
I would think that too. And then you also think about where are, you know, just so many politicians from, where are the hotbeds of political activity? And maybe you think, I don't know, Virginia or, you know, you just don't know, Maryland.
Yes.
And, you know, interestingly enough, you know, none of those states are in the top five of highest voter turnout. But you're thinking like I did. The highest voter turnout states are Maine. Okay. New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Minnesota, and Colorado. So interesting. It makes you think about a couple other things, certainly. But these states in the Northeast, they get out and vote. Average voter turnout, I think over it's some period of time. I don't know if it's the last 10 years, 20 years, is somewhere in the low 50s as a percent, somewhere around 52-53%, depending on what period of time you're looking at. And I think that's interesting. Among eligible voters, voter turnout in this country is around 52-53%. I believe this year it's expected to be much higher. But among developed nations, you know, what we call first world countries, we have the lowest voter turnout among developed nations. And that's, I don't know if that's embarrassing or just what, or is a reflection of our candidates or just what, but I think it's a little bit troubling, right?
Yes, I would agree. And I do want to say welcome to Annalie. She is available on the phone now. Annalie, how are you this morning?
Well, I'm good. I'd be better if my internet would work for me. But besides that, life is good, babe. And I just want to comment, Mr. Bob,
yes,
on what you're talking about. I have a question. Have you voted?
Not yet. I do it the old-fashioned way. We go around the corner right off Garden Street, and we go vote on Tuesday.
Yeah, I did. I did Friday. I didn't want to wait in line with other people.
That's interesting. Everybody has said to me, why would you go and wait in line? I said, well, everybody I've talked to has already voted. There may not be a line. I might, you know, this might be, you know, an easy ordeal. But that's where I've voted, you know, I think since I've been in Pensacola. And it's never been that crowded, you know. I don't know why, but anyway, Annalie, we were talking about voter turnout and the states with the highest voter turnout. I put Ruthie on the spot, asking her what states she thought had the highest voter turnout, and her first guess was Florida. And I like the way she was thinking. She was thinking a lot of old people.
Maybe it was wishful thinking.
Yes. But, again, highest voter turnout in the United States, Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Minnesota, and Colorado. Lowest voter turnout in the United States. What states do you think? We'll put Annalie on this one. Lowest voter turnout, Annalie. What do you think?
Uh-oh, like we lost her again. Okay. All right, that's all right, Annalie. We'll get you back on. I'll take a stab. How about somewhere like Idaho?
Huh,
somewhere low population.
Okay, low population. And I would think the opposite. Lower the population, the more likely they can get everybody out to vote. Okay?
Oh, okay.
But, I might be wrong. So the lowest voter turnout among the 50 United States. Here it is: Tennessee, West Virginia, Mississippi, Texas, and Oklahoma. So I don't know what to say about that, but so Florida's not in the top five in either category. I will say this: we have pretty high voter turnout. I'm going to take it one step further. We're going to talk about countries and the countries that have the highest voter turnout. The highest voter turnout in the world are typically the Scandinavian countries of Sweden, Norway, and Denmark. Highest voter turnout, and those countries are in the 80-something percent. So good for those countries. I don't know anything about the lowest voter turnout among countries because they're, you know, let's face it, some of these elections in these third world countries, you know, we don't have a lot of statistics on. But there are also, and this is the last thing we're going to talk about with voting, there are 22 countries on this planet that have mandatory voting. It's called compulsory voting. And these 22 countries, once you reach the age of voting, it is not a right. It is the law. You are required to get out and vote. And I was reading a little bit more about this.
Those are the countries that if you don't vote, they shoot you?
I know they fine you, and they likened it to, not filing your tax return. You are fined. You are fined, and some of these countries are... You know, these are big Argentina, Australia. There was a couple of them, but 22 countries and over a billion people of the world's population is governed under countries that require voting, require you to vote once you reach the voting age. So that is interesting. Anyway, that's about all I've got on the voting.
One of the things I find interesting is that they can have the voting right after trick-or-treat. That's kind of like, is that symbolic or what? Talking about trick-or-treat, let's talk about the fact that we're getting toward the end of the year, and there are some deadlines that are pretty quickly approaching that if you're in these situations, you need to kind of look at some things that are going on. So let's just give some updates on some of those things, if we could, Bob, because people are running out of time to do some things.
Exactly.
If you have an IRA, or 401k, I should say, and you want to convert that over to an IRA, and you have what is called net unrealized appreciation in it, it's called an NUA. If you want to get that transaction done, and those of you who have company stock in your 401k, you know what I'm talking about. Now, this is not stock that was you bought. This is what was given to you by the company. If you're going to do this, you've got to do those transactions before the end of the year. If you're going to do any distributions on that and realigning that for your taxes, if you don't do it by the end of the year, you lose that tax break. So just to let you know that, please.
Exactly.
That's one of the things that are coming up. And Mr. Slott put out a nice email this morning and kind of put it as you know, the trick-or-treating that is going on, and I love it because he named different candies, and he talked about laws. So he talked about the Twix. Think of these as candy bars. And Bob and I, we tell people this all the time. Please do not name your estate as an IRA beneficiary. And every now and then you see somebody that comes in, and we review their paperwork, and their beneficiary is stated as the estate.
Right.
Well,
right.
That's... Wow. I mean, let's talk about, Bob, what kind of benefits did the beneficiaries just lose?
Well, I'll tell you what, and the theory behind this, and the reason you don't name your estate is your estate is not a living, breathing person. Your estate has no life expectancy. So... if you name your estate, or guess what, if you name nobody at all, and I really don't think any financial advisor would allow that, although I have seen it many times. But if you name your estate or you name no one at all, it all is immediate, is taxable in that year, and that that is not going to be pretty, is it?
No, it's not, because the person who inherits has lost all of their ability to stretch out tax,
right,
to make the tax impact on that IRA less.
Right.
Because let's face it, if you cash $300,000 in 1 year, it's going to cost you more in tax than if you take that $300,000 and spread it out across 10 years as far as taxes are concerned.
Exactly.
So and you know, I've heard people say, well, you know, I don't care if they have problems, I'll be gone. Yeah, you do care. I mean, the thing is, did you work all of your life to give a big portion of your IRA to Uncle Sam? I just don't think that's why people worked all their lives.
Right. And to take it a step further, how often are the named beneficiaries different from the people that you would name to inherit your estate? Seldom. They're usually the same people, unless you have some compelling reason to name someone else. So if you, if you went to the trouble of earning all this money, socking it away, and certainly living off of it in your retirement, please take the time to complete the beneficiary designations and name those people you love.
And keep it up to date, for goodness sake.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it up to date. I had a call from one of my clients a couple of weeks ago that her husband passed away, so she is the immediate beneficiary, and all of her inheritors are charities. She was told by a law firm to go in, pay CPAs over $7,000, pay this law firm money, who, by the way, owns the CPA firm, to do a form that is now an archaic form that doesn't really do any good, that wasn't needed. So if you lose someone and you've got to claim something, especially if you're a spouse, don't make a lot of steps on these until you talk to your tax person, your financial person. Make sure that everything is in line and that everybody's doing the same thing for you, that you don't have different people doing different stuff. So just don't leave the estate as your beneficiary. That just is giving away money for nothing. Now, if someone passed away and they left the trust as a beneficiary, which is sometime done, right, you've got to get that trust documentation to the custodian. The deadline is Halloween of the year following the year of the IRA owner's death. So if you had someone that died last year that left money to the trust, and you have not yet gotten those trust documents to the custodian, you are right at your deadline.
Right.
You know, you remember that old commercial that, or that, no, it wasn't, it was that guy that he was the comedian, you know, and he used to say, get her done.
Yeah.
Well, you better get her done because
that's
we're
right.
Almost Halloween. You've got this week and that's it. So you're running out of time on that one.
Right.
Okay.
You have to get the trust documentation, meaning, you know, either the certificate of trust or the trust document itself to the trustee, the custodian of the IRA, so that they can follow the dispositive provisions, the distribution thereof, and distribute it accordingly. One other thing, how often do we see, you know, somebody passes away, a loved one, a husband, a wife, you know, a spouse, or just anyone, and the partner is just locked up, is paralyzed, doesn't do anything for months and months. Well, you've got to do some things, and this is one of them. You have 10 months into the following year to get the trust documentation to the custodian of the IRA.
Yeah. So those are some things that, and again, that's only if the trust is the beneficiary.
Right.
So be aware that some of these deadlines are just kind of creeping up on us, and I don't want you to get caught and then there's a problem. Now, remember, your advisor should always be there to help you get paperwork to the custodian. That's a very simple procedure for your advisor to do. So that should be one of the things that an advisor does for you as a service. Now, of course, if you inherited an IRA from anyone who passed away this year, not anyone who passed away before this year, anyone who passed away this year, and unless they change the laws in years to come, we can't do the stretch IRA anymore. That's where you take money across your lifetime if you're not the spouse. But again, this is where you want to sit and talk to your advisor about that 10-year payout rule under the Secure Act. Mm-hmm. And this is where your advisor should be talking to, guess who? Your tax person.
Right.
Because
right.
If we don't do that, that this thing could wind up costing you a lot of money.
Exactly.
That hurt.
And I think one of the things we're going to see a lot of going forward with the end of the stretch IRA, meaning you can, meaning the kids can inherit the IRA and have it distributed them over their lifetime and realize that income over their lifetime. Well, that's now 10 years. So where we see a large IRA and perhaps one child, you know, and let's say you've had this child late in life and they have to take, you know, let's say $1 million out over 10 years. That, I don't know if that's a great thing to do to a youngster. I don't know if it's a great thing to do to anybody. But, you know, I think one of the things we're going to start seeing is these couples are going to get together and say, you know, we're just going to go ahead and, you know, convert a lot of this to a Roth every year. And then we can control how it goes out. And they can control how it goes out. Because you don't have the 10-year, you don't have that with the Roth.
Well, you know, and the Roth has got to be dispensed. They can't just hold on to it. So, again, that's something where you really have to sit down and do some real planning. I want to remind everybody, you're listening to us, Winning with Mainstay on 1620. If you've got a question or you want to make a comment or you have a question even on something we're not talking about, call us or text us at 437-1620. We would love to hear from you and know the things that you're concerned about. But IRAs have really this year come to the forefront because of all the changes that have occurred. And I just feel like I can't say things enough to get them in your heads, because some of these changes have been big changes. Now here's one for you. If you're a non-spouse, and you're the beneficiary, you inherit an IRA. You cannot convert the inherited IRA to an inherited Roth IRA. So that goes back to what Bob just said. If you're the owner of an IRA and you think that you will benefit, the children will benefit more by inheriting a Roth, you have to do that now because they cannot convert an inherited IRA to an inherited Roth, which is really weird. But if it's still a 401, an employer plan, the designated beneficiaries can convert it. I mean, is that tricky?
It is tricky, and we are getting way down in the weeds, but yes, the owner has to convert.
Yeah. I mean, so just be aware, and the only reason I'm bringing this up is so that you will realize if you're not doing these things, the quagmire that you will be leaving for the beneficiaries, and it gets pretty sticky after a while. And most beneficiaries, unfortunately, have no idea
right
of what to do or how to do it.
Right.
You know, and a lot of them don't have advisors because there many of the younger generations are not yet into the saving mode, or the only saving they do is through their 401k, and that's not going to help you when you inherit stuff.
Right. And to possibly come back and maybe clarify what I said earlier or even correct it, you can convert the Roth over your lifetime and not convert the IRA to a Roth over your lifetimes, sort of prepay the income tax, but never have to
right.
take the money out of the Roth. You can do great things with that. Now, if and when you die with that Roth and you don't leave it to a surviving spouse, let's say the surviving spouse has the Roth, the 10-year rule still applies. The difference is you can do more things with that Roth because you don't have the tax implications, and you can avoid the 10-year rule, the elimination of the stretch IRAs, by doing some estate planning. And again, we're getting very involved in it, but yeah, I mean, the 10-year rule still applies.
Just remind everybody, please, think about your questions before we go to the news. Either text us or call us at 437-1620. We would love to hear from you because you know, being a news station, we've got a break for the news as often, and hopefully nothing's happened within these 25 minutes, but we never know, especially with the storm on the way. So that's one of the things I want you to do is prepare to take care of yourself and protect yourself with whatever may be coming our way. And I think, Ruthie, is it time for us to go over to Mr. Mark yet?
Yes, ma'am, it is.
And that's right.
All right.
We've
got some good news.
We're anticipating the arrival of what's right now Tropical Storm Zeta, but it's expected it will be a hurricane again. The latest on the storm after Fox.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Amy Coney Barrett is sworn in today by Chief Justice John Roberts to sit on the Supreme Court.
Republican Chuck Grassley announced the final tally.
The yeas are 52, the nays are 48.
No Democrat voted for confirmation. Maine's Susan Collins was the only Republican voting no. Barrett's confirmation is expected to tilt the court to the right with a 6-3 conservative majority.
Fox's Jared Halpern. The court, without Justice Barrett seated yet, sides 5-3 with Wisconsin Republicans to block an extension for mail-in ballots to be received up to 6 days after Election Day.
Democrats argued that the flood of absentee ballots and pandemic challenges made it necessary to expand the counting period. Republicans say voters have plenty of opportunities and time to cast their ballots by the close of polls on Election Day.
Fox's Jeff Manasso. President Trump campaigns in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Nebraska today. Joe Biden's in Georgia. America's listening to Fox News.
It's 10:31 at News Radio 92.3, AM 1620. 78 and cloudy, I'm Mark Jacobs. Tropical Storm Zeta moved across the northern Yucatan Peninsula this morning with winds of 70 miles an hour. It's expected to regain hurricane strength later today as it's now moving into the southern Gulf. Primary impacts in our area likely from wind and storm surge, along with a chance for tornadoes. Escambia County officials plan to hold a news conference about an hour from now. We'll have live coverage. Controversy lingering as removal of the Confederate monument from Pensacola's Florida Square begins. Council voted to remove the statue in July after a lawsuit put it on hold. The removal process finally started Monday. Sabrina Wallace Jordan telling Channel 3.
Times are different, and things should be different, and we need to embrace, you know, ethnicity, culture, people, you know, and this, again, this is the first milestone to that happening for our city.
A spokesperson for the city says the contract for removal is for 30 days, total cost of $135,000.
Keeping temperatures into the lower 80s. Rain chances coming in later in the afternoon, early evening, about a 60 to 70% chance of showers. We'll also have, obviously, a decent rain chance tomorrow as well as Zeta gets closer. For now, though, I'm meteorologist Joseph Neubauer reporting in the Channel 3 First Warning Weather Center.
78 in Pensacola, 79 in Gulf Breeze, also 78 in Milton at 10:33. Our next news at 11 with breaking news anytime. I'm Mark Jacobs, News Radio 92.3, AM 1620.
Our next news at...
I'm Jennifer Kuchinko with Your Money Now. Stocks are mixed. The Dow Industrials down 110 at 27,574. The S&P 500 down a point. The NASDAQ is up 75. The Trump administration will this week announce a plan to cover out-of-pocket costs of COVID-19 vaccines for millions of people who receive Medicare or Medicaid. According to the plan, Medicare and Medicaid will cover vaccines that receive emergency use authorization from the FDA. According to a new study in the journal Pediatrics, YouTube is feeding kids a steady diet of junk food. Researchers looked at more than 400 YouTube videos that were geared toward children, starring some of the most popular video creators known as kid influencers. It found references to brands like McDonald's, Carl's Jr., Hershey's, Chuck E. Cheese, and Taco Bell. About 90% of the foods featured in the YouTube videos were unhealthy items like milkshakes, french fries, soft drinks, and cheeseburgers, emblazoned with fast food logos. That's Your Money Now.
Join Claimology Thursday morning at 10:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Matthew Vanderford with Claimology will be talking about insurance claims. He'll be discussing the recent storms, as well as the importance of being properly insured prior to a storm, as well as inspections after a storm. Matthew will be taking calls to answer your questions so you'll know what you need before the next storm arrives.
The Pensacola Expert Panel with Ruthie C. 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Fridays are always fun and furry on the Pensacola Expert Panel with Ruthie C. Tune in every Friday at 10:30 for Frisky Friday as we spotlight animals that are looking for their forever home. As always, we're joined in studio by members of numerous local animal shelters, like the Escambia County Animal Shelter, the Pensacola Humane Society, and the Santa Rosa County Animal Services. That's every Friday at 10:30 on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. And on our Facebook page at News Radio 92.3.
Now, more of the Pensacola Expert Panel with Ruthie C. on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. You got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there.
And they stay there.
And they stay there.
Up, down. Woo! All right, here we are, winning, winning, winning. Welcome back to Winning with Mainstay. I'm your host, Annalee Leonard, and I've got Bob with me today. And we're kind of talking about some end-of-the-year deadline type things that are coming up. And if we get finished with this, we'll go back to some other little points that we picked up. But I want to go through some of these things that people get involved in. Now, if you're under 59 and one half, I know that's a strange age. I didn't create it. The government did. If you're under 59 and a half, the one thing you cannot do is make what's called a hardship withdrawal and expect the 10% penalty to be waived. It will not. Now, sometimes you can get that penalty waived if it's like a 403B, a 401K, but you cannot do that with an IRA. Now, there's an exception this year. Gosh, okay, how do we ever keep up with all this, Bob? I have no idea. There's an exception this year, and that's because of coronavirus.
Right.
But you got to prove that you or a spouse or a child were directly affected to be able to withdraw some money. And then we've got, 3 years, right, Bob, to put that back in?
That is correct. That is correct.
Yeah. So think about those things. I mean, some of these rules, they say one thing, and then they come back and they give you something else,
right,
which is really weird. Really weird.
It is weird. And isn't it odd that you can, you can do this. You can also borrow from your 401k. And you've pretty much always been able to do that if your plan allows it. But, once it's in an IRA, you know, for all intents and purposes, you cannot pull out money pre-59 and a half without paying a 10% penalty. Except for this year.
Only if you were directly affected.
You can prove that. Exactly.
Okay. And that's the thing we talk about. And I know we talk a lot about Roth conversions, but this is where I also want you to be very, very careful. You have to understand the whole pro rata rule if you're doing conversions, because that takes in all of your IRAs, your SEPs, your simple plans. You also have to be very careful if you're getting toward Medicare age where you're going to pay that point B. The government's going to look at how much money you've made, and the more money you've made within a two-year period, they will raise your Part B premium. Now, sometimes you can get around that with a letter of exception. Notice I use the word sometime. Or you make sure that if you're going to do conversions, you understand that Part B could go up and you've got the money to pay it. So the best thing to do is you do this as a methodology where you make sure the conversion is not going to mess up your Medicare Part B, and you make sure that it's not going to put you into a higher tax bracket. So that's where it takes your advisor working with the tax person. I know I keep going back to that, mm-hmm. but here's the thing. As much as Bob and I know about taxes, and believe me, we have to know a lot, because of the licenses we hold, we cannot give you tax advice.
Exactly.
I mean, and sometimes it's really hard not to do because we know the answer, mm-hmm. but we can't just tell you. So that's where we got to get the tax person on the phone and make sure everyone is in agreement. So, you know, you want to be really careful with these Roth conversions, that you have the money to pay the taxes, that, you know, you understand the rules and you understand what it could do to your Part B on your Medicare, okay? I know, it's just a lot of fun, isn't it? Okay. Oh, here's another one. No such thing as a prior year Roth conversion or a prior year qualified charitable distribution. So if you want to do a qualified charitable distribution this year and you have to be 70 and a half to do that, 70, you got to get it done by December the 31st. But again, remember this year, no one has to do an IRA distribution. But you can still do a qualified charitable distribution if you want to do one.
Right.
Okay. And nobody's saying you can't, but it's you don't have to.
And
right?
the hardship distribution, pre-59 and a half hardship distribution from your IRA, as well as the suspending the RMD this year, 2020, is part of the CARES Act. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those two things are, we hope are laws just for this year only.
And you know, that's the thing, we don't know. We don't know. There's so much right now that's going on. The election is up in the air. What will be done, no matter which side wins, we have no idea. You and I have had many conversations about this, Bob. I think a lot of these rulings are going to have to be changed. I think the tax tables are going to have to be changed, no matter who wins.
Right.
Simply because of the fact our country's on a verge of bankruptcy, and if we don't put some money back into it, we're all going to be in really big trouble. So, you know, I just like everybody else, am anxiously waiting to see what they're going to do as we get into the next few years and what changes are going to come about. I think the changes are going to come pretty fast and furiously. And again, I think they're going to happen no matter which side gets in.
Exactly. I think we all agree with that. And change is coming with our federal income taxes. That is a certainty.
Yeah. So this is where you need to make sure you're keeping in close contact with your advisor. Your advisor is sending out to you the rules as they change so you know how to adjust to them, and that they are ready to give you advice on whatever happens. We're in the midst right now of doing a newsletter for the end of the year, and, you know, we will have a lot of information in there as to what's coming. Now, here is one of the things, too. If you did take a required minimum distribution because you didn't know that you didn't have to, you only have 60 days from when it came out to be able to put it back in. So if you went beyond 60 days from the time it was distributed, you might be eligible for a waiver again if it's coronavirus-related. If it isn't, you only have those 60 days, okay?
Right.
So please be careful about that, all right? So we covered the charitable distribution deadline is December the 30th, the corona-related distribution, your deadline for that is December the 30th. The Roth conversion deadline for this year is December the 31st for it to count for now. But people, this is the thing I'm going to tell you. Please do not wait till December the 31st. If you're going to do this kind of stuff, do it before December 15th. Why? What happens up north? They have snowstorms.
Yes, they do.
Cities closed down.
Right.
Government offices closed down. As it is this year, government offices have been almost vacant. You know, sometimes the custodian will not get things on time if you wait till the last minute. So if you're going to do that kind of stuff, do it when? Now.
Now. Do it now.
Do it now. Don't wait. And if it's, you know, at the latest, please, December the 15th, because the holidays start coming in. You know, we used to have to worry, like last year when I say used to, because you also had office parties in there, people taking time off. I don't think we're going to have that problem this year. But, you know, we're still going to have the problems of weather. We're still going to have the problems of communication. So please make sure. Please make sure.
Right. And the other year-end deadlines still apply. You know, you can offset long-term gain with losses. If, you know, if you have a big gain from a transaction earlier in the year, of course you can offset that with a loss later in the year. But the offsetting gain with loss, obviously, that is also December 31st of this year.
Yeah. So, you know, the thing is, talk to your advisor often. Your advisor should always be willing to talk to you. Call them. If not, call us at 437-3127. We would love to talk to you and help you out, especially as we are getting toward the end of the year and some of these things have got to be done. Every now and then you can, you know, in the Catholic Church we call it a dispensation, that you can get a dispensation if you do something not quite right and they can make it right that way. But the government's not quite as lenient sometimes. So it truly depends upon who gets your paper and, you know, kind of like what state of mind are they in that day. So do things early enough that if anything has to be redone, it can be redone before the end of the year. So don't wait till the last minute.
Right.
Bob, let's hit a few things that we had talked the last couple of weeks about picking a financial advisor. And I wanted to take just a minute to go through a couple of the things that your advisor should be doing for you. And if they're not, you need to give us a call at 437-3127. You know, in some of these we've talked about, but some of the things, formalize your goals. Put them in writing and formalize them where they're realistic. And guess who needs to be able to understand them?
Right. That's exactly right.
You. Not us. You have to be able to understand it. I mean, it's like if you go to a doctor and he gives you this whole list of stuff and he writes it in what I call doctorese, you'll read it, but you still don't know what you have or what's going on. So it's got to be in a terminology that you understand. They should give you alternatives on how to meet your goals. Put together a good financial plan for you, an investment policy statement for you. Help you understand how and when to claim your Social Security. Help you in putting together an estate plan. That goes into what? Talking with your attorney, whoever's going to do your estate plan. Keeps you on track with your IRAs, your required minimum distribution. All those things tend to be so important. And I think if nothing else after the last three, well, this year, after the last 10 months, you should realize how important it is for the person who's giving you advice to stay up to date on the changes that are occurring.
Right. That's exactly right.
I mean, how many changes do you think we've had this year, Bob?
Gosh. You know, with the CARES Act, it depends on what level. But certainly, what would you say, 10 to 20 on retirement plans alone?
Oh, at least.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the changes that have come about over the last couple of years in the tax tables directly affect your retirement plan and what you're going to do with it.
Right.
All these coronavirus type changes directly have come about and affected the retirement plan. So it's, and again, I don't think we're done. So I think it's important you to have an advisor who talks to you, stays up to date. One of the things that we do, and I don't know if other advisors do this or not, Bob, I've never had anyone come in and say that their advisor did, but I think your advisor should help you keep up with your investments on your 401k or your 403b and balance those with whatever investment the advisor is doing.
Correct.
I mean, we should kind of look at that as one plan, don't you think?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. You know, the other thing we need to talk about is lifetime income. You know, you got to make sure you don't run out of money, out of life, money before you run out of life. That's one of the biggest fears out there. And again, I can't hit on this one enough. I think your advisor should be able to give you unbiased investment research and provide you with a personal investment analysis. So, you know, I don't want to be personally, I don't want to be tied to any particular set of proprietary funds that I have got to use. That, to me, is just not giving my client everything I could give them.
That's right. And how often do we see, you know, we'll see a statement, and it will be with a particular investment company, and it will be one family of funds. So, you know, great question. What are the chances that all of these funds that you own in your portfolio are the very best performing and have an objective that is in line with your objectives across the board? There is zero chance of that. It can't be the best performing fund.
Yeah,
so,
and a lot of them have back-end fees that are hidden.
Exactly.
You don't want to fool with that,
exactly.
You know. So you want somebody who just takes the time, talks to you, deals with your taxes, deals with the legal side, does person-to-person, whether that be now in today's world, Zoom calls or emails or phone calls, but is willing to go through those things and help you and keep you on track. And it one of the other things that we've seen is we get people that come in to see us that have a good size amount of debt, and no one has helped them to try to reduce that. I think that's part of the obligation of the advisor.
That's absolutely correct. It is the obligation of the advisor, yes.
You know, and that can be as simple as running illustrations for you to show you if we do this to pay off that debt, this is what it's going to save you in interest costs. And, you know, I've had young people come in to me and they say, well, I want to start saving money. And my first question to them is, of course, let's talk about your life right now and where you are. And they'll come in and have $25,000-$30,000 of credit card debt that's at 23% interest.
Exactly.
Now, Bob, I bet you know what I tell them.
What do you tell them to do with those credit cards?
Pay them off. Before you start coming in and saving money with me, you pay those credit cards off, because those things are going to eat you alive. So we get rid of that first. Then what do? We build an emergency fund.
Mm-hmm.
Then what do? Then you come in and we start saving money.
Right.
You know, and sometimes people don't like to hear that. And I, you know, but I think it's, you really, you know, you've got a good advisor when that advisor is going to turn down business because it's not the right thing for you to do at that time.
Right. And all debt is not bad.
No,
the credit card debt is, you know, sometimes you run into these young people, and gosh, you know, I've got kids myself, and I've seen them when they get their first credit card, and they can't believe that somebody extended them credit. Well, you know, 6 months later, when you have a balance of a couple thousand dollars at 14.99% interest, you know, that is not a good thing, and nobody's doing you a favor. And keeping that balance on that credit card, you're doing exactly what they want you to do. And but, you know, home equity lines, mortgages, consolidating your debt into something that is low interest and, you know, possibly and sometimes tax deductible, that's good
right.
debt.
Bob, hang on. We've got a call. Let's see if we can give them an answer. What do we have, Ruthie?
Good morning. We are speaking with Larry in Pensacola. Larry, welcome to Winning with Annalee and Mainstay.
Good morning, Larry. What can we do to help
this morning? Annalee, you may have covered it. I just did tune in. But, okay, I'm older, in my 70s, and as I have some money to put somewhere, my thought at this time is putting it in something safe like CDs, where CDs is under 1% for, you know, 2012, 2024, whatever. But is there any other strategy for somebody, you know, that's that old in terms of making sure that, I just having a hard time with the stock market. I just can't believe we are, you know, where we are going into, what we're going into. Anyway, what are your thoughts here? You may have already covered it, and I apologize if you have.
No. I'm glad you called. Thank you for calling. You know, there are a lot of differences out there. It's with that money, first of all, it's going to depend upon how liquid you need it to be. So if it's money that you don't need to have liquid, there are some short-term fixed annuities out there. And when I say short-term, I'm talking 2-year, 3-year, 4-year, 5-year. I would go no longer than a 5-year. But they're paying much better interest than the CDs are right now, and they're totally safe. If it's money that you don't need, and it's money that's there, and the only time you might need it would be perhaps if you went into a nursing home or had a terminal illness of some type, there are longer-term annuities that give a potential for a higher growth. Now, if we want to keep it liquid, there are some good things out there still in the market. There are short-term bonds that can be laddered across a 5-year. Now, you're not going to make a fortune on them, but again, most of the time they're making more than the CD. And even if they do go down in value, you're getting the interest at the end of the 1 year, 2 year, 3 years, you get the full value back. So it really, the biggest thing I would say, Bob, see if you agree on that, is whether you need liquidity. You've already pretty well answered me. You don't want to take risk with it. So to me, those would be some of your possible solutions. Right. You know, and if you want to keep it liquid, the CD might be the answer.
Right. And I was just going to say, you know, we certainly understand you don't want to put your money at risk. There's a lot between certificates of deposit and putting your money in the market, and you can enjoy the same level of safety and eke out a better return, without putting your money at risk. The one other thing I'd like to add, and you know, I'm not this is not a PSA for the banks or credit unions, but I've never considered a certificate of deposit an investment. It's more of a parking place until you decide what to do with it. But those, you know, high interest rate CDs are, you know, to me a thing of the past. And I would just, you know, look at other venues.
Please go out for
treats.
Bye now.
Let you know that you appreciate them. Give people a smile now more than ever. Smile at them with your eyes. Wonderful world. See you next. Bye-bye.